Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus podcast. I've got a unique podcast, and it is a special treat for all of you guys. Brian's experiencing our current 2013 Missions Conference, and we have the Marie family with us as potential candidates for ministry. And sitting to my right is Luke, and to my left is Jessica. And you guys have two girls. Their names?
Kira and Haley.
Okay, Kira and Haley. And their ages?
They're 7 and 4 years old.
7 and 4 year olds. So still cute little girls, girls. And where has God called you to minister?
God has called us to minister in the country of Bolivia, South America.
All right, so we've got South America in our mind. And Luke, what's the big country in South America?
Brazil.
That's on the eastern side?
Is that correct? Eastern side.
All right, so tell us in relationship to that, because we can kind of get a mental picture of that. Where's Bolivia?
If you take the eastern side of South America, you've got Brazil, which makes up the most of that, and then we're sandwiched in between Brazil, Peru, Chile, and Argentina. So we are right there in the heart of South America.
Almost like Switzerland in Europe then.
Yes, that's
that
right.
Kind of an idea. So you have 4 countries that are surrounding you?
We actually have five.
Five countries. See, I can't even count. And, but those that listen in the audience, they know that that I can't count, and math is not my strong suit. So we have 5 countries surrounding Bolivia, and I'm looking at a map of Bolivia, and it looks like a pretty small country.
Yeah, it's about twice the size of Texas, maybe just a little bit more.
Okay, so then it's not as small as what I was thinking about, twice the size of
but
Texas.
A decent land mass.
Yes, right. It's bigger than what I was thinking. Now, in Bolivia is a very unique place. What is that place, Luke?
The Salt Desert, the Uyuni Salt Desert. It is a landmass that is over 4,000 square miles in size. That translates into over 2,600,000 acres of pure salt, and it is at over 12,000 feet above sea level.
So this, I'm looking at a Wikipedia article, and we're going to link this to it. And the spelling is S-A-L-A-R space D-E space U-Y-U-N-I. So if you just start with that salar, it'll pull up. I'm looking at a picture on the right-hand side. You can look it on your screen at the house if you get a chance to pull this up on Google. And it looks like a lake.
It looks like a lake. They say that it used to be a great salt lake.
Used to be a great salt lake.
But they have no history of it.
Right. They say millions of years ago, of course.
Millions of years ago, that's the idea. That's what a scientist would say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Presently, it is salt.
Correct.
Like salt that you pick up and you put in your mouth and it's bitter? Or does anyone do that? Or
you could lick it and it would just taste like table salt.
Like when I go to the beach and I swim in the ocean and I kind of have that residue on my body, is that the same idea?
It is actually harvested in one town called Colchani. They have the rights to harvest the salt, and it is processed, and I use that term loosely, and then it is sold throughout Bolivia as table salt.
And the process is simply sticking it in an oven where it'll burn off the moisture, running it through a hopper to grind it up finer. They add a handful of iodine, and they bag it up, and that's what you eat.
Now, this is the salt that I previously was walking on?
Correct.
Yes, so we like to joke that we might be eating some of the salt that we've been walking on.
Oh, I'm a little repulsed at that. It's a little bit gross, but... But, you know, we're not here to give the listening audience just a geography lesson, although we think that's important to know geography. There's something incredibly special that happened for you guys in this salt sea.
Right.
And when did this happen? When did this, what was the month and what was the year that this special event that we want our listener to listen to, when did it happen?
It was in January of 2009.
January of 2009. So it's 2013 and it's March, so about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that would have put your children at an infant and...
3 years old.
A 3-year-old and an infant. And you're in Bolivia, and you're doing what trip?
We were finishing up our language, and we felt impressed to do a survey trip and find where God would have us minister specifically.
So you were already called to Bolivia, is that right? You mm-hmm. knew you were supposed to be in Bolivia, correct. But now we're trying to find within Bolivia, where are we going to build a church?
That's right.
That's the focus. The language is?
Spanish, predominantly.
Spanish. Yeah.
Predominantly Spanish, and so you'd learned it?
We had learned it, yes, sir.
Okay, and now we've got to figure out where are we going to plant that church, and then we're going to go back and try to raise support? Is that, or we already have support?
We already have support. We're there.
Okay, and we're going to focus on starting a church somewhere.
Correct.
And we had taken a survey trip in November, 2 months before this time, and had traveled all around Bolivia, finding out what churches, what were the religions there, the need, and praying all along where God wanted us. And God had impressed Uyuni upon our hearts. Uyuni is the town that either the Salt Desert is named for, or the town is named for the Salt Desert. I'm not sure which, but
okay.
It sits 12 to 15 miles outside of the desert itself.
Okay, we're looking at that picture, Luke, and our listener can look at it.
It'd be on this far eastern side, right where it kind of comes to a point here, just below that point.
All right, so if 12 o'clock is the top of this circle of a sea, it would be the 1 to the 3 o'clock
just
position?
About, just about 4 o'clock.
About 4 o'clock is where it would be. So we want you, if you can, and not if you're driving down the road, but if you're listening to the podcast at home, it might be helpful to pull up the Wikipedia article and look at this diagram, this is satellite imagery, of this salt sea. I'm going to use that expression, salar. All right, where are we at and where are we going? And let's use the clock directions because that'll kind of help our listener.
We were visiting the town of Uyuni, which is at about that 4 o'clock.
Okay.
For the second time. With the intent of moving there, looking at apartments and...
Okay.
Right, we spent a week there looking at our options. Where can we find a place to live? Speaking with many people about the possibility of moving there and starting a ministry there. And we felt impressed. Part of that ministry would have been... traveling around the Salt Desert and having opportunity to share the gospel in the myriad of little villages that are all around the Salt Desert.
All right, help me understand, Jessica, why do we have villages around a salt desert? I mean, I understand why we have villages around a lake, but why do we have villages around a salt?
Apparently, from what we understand, the soil is really good for growing quinoa.
And what is quinoa?
Quinoa is a grain that is grown down in South America. Apparently, it's all the rage now with health food nuts.
Health food nuts.
She just called them nuts.
Right,
really
right.
Did.
I'm sorry. Right. That's fine. I mean, I have a Mountain Dew in my hand, okay? So you're not going to offend me. Now, you guys are the ones that have drank
quinoa.
Nothing but water since I've met you.
It's a teeny tiny little grain.
All right, it's a little grain, and they grow it around here.
It grows very well around the Salt Desert. For whatever reason, the soil is perfect for it.
Nothing else grows because the soil is salted.
Okay, so we're growing that. We've got these small villages that most of us in America cannot even comprehend how they're living. Is that fair?
That's very fair.
No running water in some cases?
In some cases, I think some of them have electricity. I'm not sure all of them do. Probably no indoor plumbing for a lot of them.
Actually, most of them do not have electricity. Some of them have these solar systems.
Okay.
So that
right,
they can
right.
have
right.
some solar lighting at in the
okay.
evening.
McDonald's on every corner?
There's not a McDonald's in Bolivia.
Wow.
There are... a few Burger King franchises in some of the other cities.
The large ones.
The large ones.
This is a very remote region.
This is very remote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so continue. We're at this city. What prompts you to make a trip?
We, in the November previous to November of 2008, we had went on a tour And we felt that was the safest way to go out onto the desert and get familiar with it. And the tour brought us up to that 12 o'clock position. As you look on the map, you see a circular image that is a volcano.
All right, so at the 12 o'clock position, there is what appears to be, like you said, a circle. And there's a white kind of a dot in the middle of it. We assume that's the empty spot of the volcano.
That is the crater of the volcano.
The crater, okay, correct. Very good. And that's our 12 o'clock position.
Up over 18,000 feet above sea level.
The volcano is 18,000 feet above. The sea is 12,000.
Correct.
So we're way up there.
Mm-hmm. We're way up there. Now, around that volcano, there is extra fertile ground because of all the minerals that are involved there. So because of the fertile ground, we saw a map on that tour that showed 17 or 18 different villages, and we thought, wow, there is a cluster of people, and this might be a great point of contact there. So on our last day there in the town of Uyuni, we talked with some of the locals. There's many, many tour agencies, and we spoke to them about going over to the volcano and about what they thought of us speaking with the people. They all said, oh, yeah, there's many, many villages over there. That'd be a great place for you to travel. We asked them what precautions we ought to take with the vehicle. They told us, well, it's a one-time trip. Spray the underbody with diesel. Drive slowly, and you guys should be just fine.
So let's be sure. There's no roads on this. There's no stop signs. You're just driving.
We could see the volcano on the horizon, and so we just pointed the nose of the truck toward the volcano and took off.
Do you have a GPS?
At this point, no, we did not have a GPS, but we did have a compass built in the dashboard of our truck.
Okay, you have a compass. What kind of truck? Describe the vehicle.
It was a Toyota Land Cruiser. That's pretty much the best vehicle to have there in Bolivia.
You borrowed it, or?
We had purchased it.
Okay.
It was an older vehicle, and we had acquired it a few months before, and we're very, very happy with it.
Okay, you're at the 4 o'clock position. You're going to travel to the 12 o'clock position, which is basically kind of a diagonal movement, if you will.
Right.
How many miles is that, Luke?
It is 60 miles once you get on to the desert.
Okay, so you get on the edge of the desert to the edge of the is 60 miles. How many more miles to the city?
Another 12 to 15 miles away.
12 to 15 miles away. Now, around here, that just sounds like not a whole much. But, you know, we go to Raleigh. Raleigh's right up the road, and we go shopping up there, and it's only 75 miles away. But there's a little bit of difference between traveling those 75 miles and these.
Correct.
Yeah. Talk to us about the speed that you can travel on this desert.
Well, for 3 to 4 months out of the year, during the rainy season, water actually accumulates and stands on the salt desert. And so it was recommended to us that we go anywhere between 15 to 20 miles an hour because all that water, all that salted water is splashing up on your vehicle.
Okay, the rainy season is from when to when?
From about the beginning of December to end of February. Sometimes it can start a little bit sooner, go a little bit longer.
Okay, so you're traveling during...
I think we traveled faster, a little bit faster than that.
Okay, so you're traveling during the height of the rainy season and you're just almost like hydroplaning, it seems like. I mean, you're spraying water constantly.
Water spraying everywhere.
Right, because it's just several inches of water, and it just varies wherever you're at in the salt desert, but not very much, just varying in degrees, a couple inches, but deeper toward the edge.
All right, we're making this trip. How's it go on the first leg of it?
The first leg, we made it all the way to the volcano without any incident.
You remember how long it took you?
Maybe between 2 to 3 hours because we were driving slow.
Okay. So we get there. What happens?
We get there and we approached the first village and there wasn't a soul to be seen. And there we saw laundry hung up. We saw smoke coming out of one of the windows. They don't really do chimneys
okay
there. And we tried some doors. Nobody wanted to answer. They weren't
interested. Door-to-door evangelism wasn't working, huh?
Not so much.
Okay.
And then we traveled over to another one of the villages, and on the road we saw three people. And we tried to engage them in conversation, and they weren't having any of that either. We arrived in the next town, and same thing. Nobody was around. Go to the next one, and nobody was around. By this time, it was around 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon. And so we decided we had better make the return trip before dark came. And that's when we had talked with some people in Uyuni and told them, look, we will be back by supper time, so that somebody would be expecting us.
Okay, so your intent was to go, this was a day trip.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go over there, check it out for a little bit. It's only 60 miles an hour away. We'll do 20 miles an hour. That's a 3-hour trip that way, 3-hour trip back, and we'll be done with this.
Right.
That was the idea.
That
was the plan.
Okay, what kind of provisions did you have with you?
We had brought 8 liters of water. We had some food. Haley, of course, was only 8 months old, so we had all the necessities for a baby. We always travel with a whole bag full of tools and extra fuses and pieces of wire and all that sort of thing, just in case. So we thought we were decently well off.
All right, so it's 3:30 in the afternoon, and we are now traveling back for dinner.
Right. We were traveling back for dinner, and we had traveled a ways, and Jessica wanted to take some more photos.
You're a photographer?
I do enjoy taking pictures. Well, both of us do. It's kind of a hobby.
Okay.
And so we stopped several times because just amazing photos there when it is covered in the water. It's just this mirror image of everything else. And next thing you know, the truck, the gauge for the heat went all the way to high, and the truck cut off because it overheated.
So your engine is overheating, and it shuts down.
Correct.
How long had you been traveling for?
I'm not sure. We estimated at the time that we thought we went about 40 miles. So another 2 hours, maybe?
Right. Something that was like at 4:45. No, I guess if we left at 3:30, it was just over an hour out.
Okay.
And the engine was off. I waited an hour for it to cool down. I tried to start the vehicle again, and it would not start. I went under the hood and I checked the fuses. The fuse to the ignition was blown. So I grabbed my Leatherman, pulled that fuse out, put a new fuse in, cranked it over, it fired up, and then almost instantly died again. And I checked the fuse, it had blown again. So I swapped the fuse out again, cranked it up, it ran for about 5 seconds that time, and then it shut off. And from that point on, it never would start again. So now we're into the later afternoon, and we realized that nothing was going to be happening with this truck. I was trying to figure out how else I could get it started. I am not a mechanic.
So what are you thinking right now, Jessica?
My first thought was, oh, no big deal. I guess we'll just walk out, or maybe a tour will come along, until he did the math for me and we realized how much of a distance we still had to go and estimated how long it might actually take us to walk out. We thought maybe we had 20 to 25 miles left, and if carrying 2 children we could only walk 2 miles an hour, we'd have a 10-hour trip or longer. And then the reality of it hit. Oh, this isn't something that could be fixed easily. So it was
so you turned
concerning.
On your cell phone, you called AAA.
No cell phone service for about 30 miles.
No cell phone service.
Ooh, or longer than that, probably. Further than that.
Okay, maybe. So no ability to get a hold of anyone.
Correct.
And there isn't a road, per se, that someone can travel down that would just pass you and pull over and provide help.
No road. We had been following tire tracks, if you will, there on the desert. There was a route, or people point there, the front of the vehicle towards the volcano, and they go. So
there is something that looks like it.
Right, and the salt is so harsh and abrasive that it just eats people's tires up. So they're quote-unquote roads are just tire tracks, and everybody follows the tire tracks. So we were following some of those tire tracks back toward the entrance of the desert.
But you would need somebody that was traveling back from the volcano, basically, to hit your same path.
Right, and it is a commonly traveled route. People always go out to see the volcano, or they, at the very least, they go to the volcano, and then from the volcano, they're going back the way we were headed. And it was likely that somebody would have passed by us. But we found out the next day when we talked to some of the same tour agencies that we had talked to before we left, that because the water gets deep, and those that rubber that's worn off and kind of makes a path, if you will, during the rainy season, that rubber wears off. And so people do not go over to the volcano during that time of the year. We did not have that information before we went, but
right.
God knew exactly what he was doing.
The salt desert gets thousands of visitors each year. And the first time we had gone, we passed a ton of people. And so this time, with the individuals that we talked to did not give us the warning that nobody actually went to the volcano this time of year. So we were expecting to pass a bunch of people on tours. And then, of course, when we began walking out, we were also hoping that a tour would pass by and pick us up.
So on the trip over, did you pass anybody?
We did not.
No one?
Nope, not a soul.
All right, and so how about coming back until the vehicle stopped?
Never saw a soul.
Nope, that was those tourers who told us after the fact that nobody goes over there.
Okay.
They all avoid that area because of the water being
40 miles river. Back to the village where nobody knows you and won't answer the door, and 20 miles the other direction
right.
to where you came from,
right.
And it's 6 o'clock at night.
It was the sobering reality was that we were going to have to spend the night in the truck and spend the next day hiking out, or hopefully having an encounter with one of the tour vehicles and carrying our daughters, getting them out.
How cold is it in the month of January now at nighttime?
We do not have an accurate temperature. All I can say is that night in the truck, it was freezing cold.
We guess maybe it got down the 40s, maybe?
We're not sure.
Right,
we're not sure, but all we know is we were cold.
It was pretty cold.
Okay, food?
We had the food that we had brought with us from the day before. We had not eaten all of our provisions. Plenty of water still.
All right.
And when we realized that we were going to be spending the night and that we were going to have to walk out, we remembered that we had been told stories of how others have gotten either broken down or get out there walking. And especially during the rainy season, if you get any amount of cloud or haze, then the glass-like surface of the salt desert with that water makes a mirror, and you lose all point of reference. You have no mountains to guide you by. And so we just prayed out to God and asked him to give us a clear day. Now, the day that we traveled out, it was a hazy day, but we could still see the volcano through the haze, and we had our compass. But we knew we were going to be without our compass now, and we just prayed that God would give us clear skies and that he would give us a favorable temperature so that we could make this trek. Mind you, it's at 12,000 feet above sea level, that being another factor. Our bodies had been accustomed to 8,000 feet, but 12,000 feet is another story still.
Okay, so everything is more difficult.
Everything's more difficult. The temperatures are cooler because of the elevation. So that night, I guess we spent a lot of time praying, like Luke said, for good weather the next day and just for safety. And that was a long night. But the next day, God answered our prayer and he gave us this beautiful, crystal clear day. We could see the mountains in the distance where we knew the town was. The temperature, we guesstimate to be close to 70. We had sweatshirts on. We had sunglasses, our hoods pulled up, hats on. We did sunscreen. We took all the precautions we could because at that elevation, you can get sunburned very, very easily. So we were very well covered and got started, I guess, about 7:45 in the morning.
And you're just walking towards a mountain.
We were just walking towards a mountain.
You have no idea, really, how far you have to go.
Right. And we armed ourselves with what we felt were the essentials. Jessica took the diaper bag so that we would have what we needed for Haley. And I had a sling-style backpack that I loaded up the 8 liters of water and the food and whatever else we felt was important at the time. And I had Haley and Jessica took Kira, and Kira was up and down, up and down, up and down, and we just set off walking, hoping to encounter somebody. We did take our sunscreen, or the sunshade for the vehicle, so that if we saw somebody, we could wave that, and it would glint, the sun would glint off that, and we might catch their attention. We walked and walked and walked, came to one point where there was a mound of salt that did not have any water. And we sat down for a rest, and when we stood back up, we realized that sitting down wasn't probably the smartest idea. Our muscles had tightened, and we realized we probably shouldn't do that again. Well, so the water was a blessing in that way, in that it was motivation. We can't sit down in a pool of water. We just
gotta
keep
going. A blessing in disguise, and that it kept us walking. Now, something I guess that we should explain for our hearers, so that they understand why we need to seek medical attention later, which I know we haven't discussed that yet. But when we first set off, we had socks and shoes on, and quickly the water soaked into our socks and shoes, and the salt in the water crystallized instantly, and it's very, very abrasive, and so our socks became like this huge sandpaper, and it would have rubbed our feet raw really quickly. And we had brought our flip-flops because we knew there was water on the salt desert, so we switched over to our flip-flops and spent the rest of the time walking in flip-flops. Now, it was that time, we spent about 10 hours in salt water walking, and it was that over those 10 hours that the salt just over time wore through our skin, on our ankles, across our toes, across where the flaps of the straps of the flip-flops, it would crystallize and adhere to that, and that's where it cut the deepest grooves into our feet, especially Luke's, because he had leather straps where I had just rubber straps and the salt did not
stick.
Now,
tell me,
well,
why didn't you go barefoot?
If you go ahead and look up the Salada de Uyuni on Wikipedia, or look up images doing a Google search of that, and you get a close-up of the salt, it is highly, highly abrasive. It is rock salt. And
right, it's not soft. It's not like walking in sand. It's rock hard.
It's not a beach.
It's not a beach at all.
It's rock hard, and it's very, very coarse and rough. It would just tear your feet up instantly.
There's for instance, when we had taken the tour a couple months earlier, Kira was running to us, tripped and fell down. Now, she had long sleeves on and she landed on her elbow, and the salt just tore her flesh away from her elbow. It's just highly abrasive. There would have been no way we could have gone barefoot.
Okay, so you're walking now with no socks, the water's swishing in between your toes and all up to your ankles.
Sometimes, yeah.
And you're in salt water. And you've got this friction being created between the point of contact of the shoe or the flip-flop to your skin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as the day wore on and our flesh wore off, the discomfort became
more difficult.
The discomfort became more difficult to bear, and as the grooves on the top of our feet wore deeper, had to start walking differently to try and avoid the more painful step, and ultimately ended up pulling a muscle there in my foot. Well, after is about 1 o'clock, and we saw a truck far, far, far in the distance. This is the first vehicle we saw all day long. We waved our sunscreen. We could see the sun glinting off it, but they were just so far in the distance. They never even turned towards us. And it was at that point that we realized we've not seen a tour all day long, or up to this point. We need to get off this track that we're on the desert. And we pointed our faces towards what looked like was going to be the closest land.
So now we're no longer pursuing the city. We're trying to get off the desert.
We're trying to get off the desert before nightfall.
We're probably somewhere up here, so we're cutting in now.
Okay, so Jessica split the difference in half. If you've got your map, and she went to what would be about the 1:30 or 2 o'clock position. That's kind of what you're trying to do here. Now, I got to tell you, what was it like to see the vehicle? That must have been exciting.
It was disappointing, but I think I can speak for both of us in that the entire day, now the night before was a whole lot more difficult, but when the actual day arrived and we got started, it was survival took over, and I don't remember really feeling anything other than keep going. That's all we can do. We got to keep on going. We're going to get out of here.
Okay.
So at that point, when we turned towards the land and realized there's no tour coming, there's no sense in following this track, our goal was to get off the desert before nightfall, because the temperatures drop. And the last thing we wanted was to be stuck out there, exposed to the elements.
Now, what the listener's probably not thinking about is it would be you got to find a spot where there isn't water.
Right.
No water.
And we hadn't seen a spot like that for hours.
Right. It's not like you're going to lay down in water and enjoy the night.
And the closer you get to the edge of the salt desert, the water keeps getting deeper, so you're less and less likely to find a dry spot.
Okay.
Land looked awfully close. But from that point that we turned, it was still 4 hours before we reached land. And as Jessica mentioned, the closer we got to land, the deeper the water got. And
now tell us what's happening with your children.
God put Haley in a slumber the whole day.
Our youngest.
She was 8 months old. And she just slept in my arms.
How are you carrying her, Luke?
I had her in the front of me, and I was cradling her with both arms.
Now, Luke, that must have gotten exhausting. I mean, just holding your arm straight out with nothing in it gets exhausting. How is that working for you?
It didn't take very long at all for my muscles across my back and in my shoulders to begin to get knotted, but there's no option. I can't set her down. So for hours, really, there was the knots and tension all across my back and across my shoulders. After 8.5 hours of holding Haley, my left arm actually did give out, and I had to pass Haley to Jessica, and poor Kira, she was only 3, she wanted her daddy to pick her up.
She's tired of walking.
She's tired of walking at this point.
The joy's over with, of running around in the water?
At that point, because he had to kind of drag her along.
The water was getting deeper.
But leading up to that, and this is part of God's goodness to us, Kira has never liked to walk. She's always preferred a stroller. She's never been a walker. And this day, she just thought she was in the park And we estimated between being up and down that maybe she walked about 4 hours that day, just having fun, never complaining, never crying. And at this point, she was not very happy about being drugged about the last hour, I guess. But once we got off of the salt desert, she was happy again, which is the grace of God. And then, of course, Luke mentioned Haley sleeping all day long, which is unusual. Usually babies are more active than that, especially 8 months old. But God just...
Now, are you stopping and changing diapers? Or is it not necessary?
Only the two times we stopped. There were twice we stopped very briefly for some food and water. And to be honest, we weren't hungry. We weren't thirsty. But we knew that we needed it, so we forced ourselves to eat and drink something. And it was that time we fed her and changed her diaper and kept going.
There wasn't exactly a dry place to lay her down and change the diaper.
Right.
The two times we stopped, we found two mounds of salt, and it was dry, fairly dry. Other than that, we didn't stop at all. In fact, I'm not sure we saw another dry spot after that.
Okay, so you're walking the land, and what are you seeing?
As we approached land, we saw three vehicles go by, and we were waving that sun shield like crazy.
But they're still pretty far off in the distance.
As we said, it took 4 hours
several more hours before we reached land after that.
So we were waving that. They never saw us. We were hoping that they'd catch the glimmer on the salt desert and their curiosity would be piqued. But they never stopped. They kept going. But it gave us hope that there's a road there. So we finally hit land, and it was a couple hundred yards to get up to where the road was. And we crossed that area, which was an area that had been tilled and used for crops, and it was very, very soft soil. We were sinking into our knees, so now that's grinding dirt into those nice wounds that we have on our feet.
So you're done in the water, and your feet are tore up to pieces,
right?
And now you're getting dirt into all those cuts.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we finally traversed those couple hundred yards, and we got to what we were hoping was a road. And it was, in the sense that vehicles travel on it, but it was just a small path. And we
small dirt path.
And we were just hoping and praying that somebody else would come. We were able to walk for an additional hour. But now that we were outside of the salt water, again, the salt water was a blessing and a curse. It is what did the damage, but it's also what soothed the wounds. Now that the skin was exposed to the open air, the burns began to flare up. The skin became...
Right at this point, after traveling all day, our feet are also very sunburned. Add that on top of having all the cuts from the chunks of salt in the water. Yes, so our feet were definitely hurting a whole lot more. And so we saw in the distance what looked like a building, and we finally made it up there, and it was not a building. It was just a rocky outcrop that the locals had turned into a graveyard. They had created tombs and tunneled back in the rocks and had created their cemetery there. And so that's where
at this point, you haven't seen anyone.
Haven't seen anybody.
And you've been off the desert for at least an hour?
An hour, right.
About an hour, yeah.
And the sun was setting. Temperatures were dropping rapidly. And just due to the fact that we had the burns and the injuries to our feet, It felt colder than it probably was, but our bodies were reacting to that. Throughout the day, I failed to mention, I knew there was no cell service, but I continued to power up my phone and just see.
Right, right.
And as we approached that rocky outcrop where the tombs were, I powered up my cell phone. The battery is now flashing. And all of a sudden, I saw a flicker and the reception. And mind you, there is no cell service.
There are no towers.
There's no towers.
Miles and miles.
And I saw that, and we walked a little bit closer, and I got a solid bar.
Okay.
And I made some phone calls, and we were ultimately able to get in contact with some friends that we had made in Uyuni. And they actually have a tour business as well. And I contacted them. I explained to them what I was seeing. This is where we are. And they said they expressed their concern for us. They said, you never showed up for dinner. They have a tour and a restaurant and a hotel. That's where we were going to go for dinner. And they said, we have been so worried about you. We didn't think you'd leave without coming and saying goodbye. And they said, we would send somebody out, but nightfall's coming. We have no idea where you are. If you can give us a better reference, we will come.
You can't say the corner of Main Street and...
Right, no road names.
Nothing. No signs.
No signs. Nothing around. So, we just knew more or less that we were at a northeastern side of the Salt Desert. East of the volcano, but north of the town.
Okay.
And so, as the reality sunk in that they're not going to be able to find us tonight, we began thinking about what are our options. Temperature's dropping. We physically cannot walk anymore at this point. We have to get our babies warm. And so, we talked about pulling aside some of the stones to one of the entrances of the tombs and crawling in as long as there's enough space, crawling in as a family so that we could huddle together, be out of the wind, and share that body heat and see if hopefully some of those vehicles that had traveled earlier in the day, maybe they'd be going back out to their fields and we might be able to catch somebody then. And we had come to the point where we said, well, this is what we have to do. And it was at that moment in time that we saw headlights in the distance. And as it approached, I told Jessica, I can't walk. Can you go out there, wave these people down? We were not far off the road. And as these people approached and Jessica hobbled out, we didn't even think about the humor of the situation, if you will. They were very, very superstitious.
And, especially about graveyards.
And so here's this white apparition hobbling, not walking like a normal person, but hobbling out of the graveyard. And I believe they stopped in fear to begin with. But as Jessica communicated with them, they realized, okay, this is a real person. And then as she shared what had happened, they all got out of their vehicle graciously and
our driver
had us load up in the vehicle. And that driver took us to a town by the name of Kolchani.
Which is the entrance to the desert.
That's the entrance to the desert. We're still 12 to 15 miles away from Uyuni. And it was there we were able to then contact our friends and say, we are in Kolchani. And they came and they got us and brought us back. And
is it midnight at this point? Is it 10 o'clock at night?
How late is it? Maybe 8, 9.
I honestly don't remember.
I think it was about 7:30. When we saw the car, and it took us about half an hour to get to the town, so maybe about 8.
Okay.
Maybe 8:30 getting to Uyuni.
So we get to Uyuni, and our feet were getting progressively worse, and there was a lot of swelling. The skin was, at least on Kira and myself, now Kira just had burn, the second degree burn, it ended up being all over her face. Blisters covering her face. And that was the case with me as well. Kira and I are fair-skinned. Jessica and Haley have good olive complexion, so they had bad burns, but they didn't suffer from the second-degree burns. The blisters formed all over my feet. Again, there was swelling. We knew we needed to seek medical help. And
let me add, by God's grace, even though Kira had walked a good bit in the salt water, she had nothing on her feet. Not even a sunburn, which I'm not really sure how she escaped all of that, but no wounds, no cuts from the salt water.
So what was she wearing on her feet?
She had Crocs, the Crocs with holes in them. Okay. So I guess the salt water swished in and out, but...
But didn't cut her at all, which is just amazing, really.
Yeah, I can't imagine how it would be to have a three-year-old with you with her feet cut up. I mean, she would be crying incessantly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you would be so helpless to do nothing to help her.
Right, and God kept her safe and kept her happy.
So the listener's kind of thinking, oh, this is the story and God kept you all safe, but we haven't even really got to the point yet, have we?
Right, we've not even gotten to the point.
All right, let's drive on.
So, in traveling to Uyuni, this is, again, the place that we were convinced we had spent much time praying about Uyuni as a potential place for ministry. We were so serious that we had went to find a place that we could rent to be able to move there. In traveling to Uyuni, we had passed through the city of Sucre 2 times. And it's a great place to stop and have a real room, a real bed, a bathroom. And so we stopped there to lay our heads at rest. We had known that there was a ministry there, a single missionary lady that was ministering to a small group of deaf, and her heart was to reach all of the deaf of the city. But both times we had passed through, she wasn't there. We were not impressed of the Lord at that time to go out of our way to stop there. We were planning on going to the hearing.
Right, we thought God had called us to be church planners to the uttermost. We were headed to remote regions, and mostly in remote regions you're going to encounter hearing people. So we had intended on planning a hearing church.
All right, where is this city that you're talking about in relationship to the 4 o'clock and the 12 o'clock on the map?
Go 3 o'clock, and it was an overland trip from 3 o'clock. About
North
that trip
east.
Was an 8-hour trip.
Now, why are you going here?
We had to seek medical attention.
Okay, so 8 o'clock at night, we're getting into somebody else's vehicle?
No.
We spent the night?
We had to spend the night. We actually had to spend three more nights after that. 2 more days. But we could not leave the vehicle on the salt desert. We were informed that we could get in big trouble if you just leave a stranded vehicle. We needed to recover it anyways, but we knew we needed the medical help. But they suggested, our friends suggested, you need to take care of this before you go do anything else. So I actually had to go back out onto the salt desert in somebody else's vehicle, and I pointed them in the direction that our white truck on the white salt desert was, and by God's grace, we drove right to it. We pulled it off without breaking down again, and now that the truck is off the desert, a couple days later, we were able to hire a person in the private vehicle to drive us the 8 hours to the city of Sucre.
Right, because at this point, we tried to get bus tickets, but all the bus tickets were sold. So we had to hire a person with their private vehicle to take us.
So we're going here to get medical aid.
To get medical aid in our minds, but God has a much bigger plan in mind. So we finally were put in contact with this single missionary lady, and she instantly and graciously opened up her home. She said, you just stay with me for as long as you need to while you recover. So we arrived in Sucre. We went and visited a doctor who also was not of any help to us. He sprayed on some iodine and suggested a cream, and that was it. And if you were to look at our feet, I mean, they were extremely swollen.
Do you have pictures?
We do have pictures. They kind of look like, I told Luke his feet look like a dead man's feet.
Wow. All
swollen and blistered and disgusting.
Okay.
And so she took us to her house. At this point, neither of us could bear to stand up. There was no walking. We were laid up.
Who's taking care of your baby?
Back in Uyuni, the friends that we had made took us into their hotel, which we had been staying in a less expensive hotel, and they just brought us over. They wouldn't let us pay them back. Their ladies in the kitchen watched the girls for us. They're the ones who brought in the doctor. They helped us find the man.
Are these saved people or unsaved people?
Unsaved people.
Unsaved people that even to this day...
Just showing you common grace.
Correct.
Yes, and we're friends to this day and still praying for them and witnessing to them, and Lord willing, someday we'll see them saved.
And we that's another aspect of this story, is that through God allowing us to go through this, that opened up doors for us to share the gospel with
so
people,
many people
that just seeing us, they might avoid us.
Right.
But they found out, oh, you're the family that was stranded on the salt desert. And they said, what are you still doing here?
Right.
Why are you in Bolivia?
Mm-hmm.
You're from America. Everything is better in America. Mm-hmm. What are you doing here? And we could respond to that question and say, well, we are here because
we
serve a God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who is so great and so mighty, and yes, we have a message to share.
So we're at this house. This lady is providing medical care to you, hospitality, taking care of your daughters.
She is, and because she had a ministry with the deaf, she invited the deaf over to her house almost every day that we were there, and we were there for almost 3 weeks. And during that time, we learned that these deaf people had been praying for 10 years that somebody would come and preach to them in their own language.
That point right there, Jessica, is really climactic to this conversation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We pray for things for 10 minutes around here.
True.
10 days is like a really long time. Right. If we pray for something for 10 days, that was just an amazing amount. That was quite the prayer. 10 days I prayed, Lord, and they communicated to you guys that they had been praying for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
10 years.
So let's think about this now. This is 2009. Where were you guys at 10 years? 1999. Where were you at?
First year in college for me.
Bob Jones University?
Bob Jones University.
And I was training with a musical ministry for a year out of high school.
And just consider that. You're out of high school. You're a freshman at Bob Jones. You're soon to be a freshman at Bob Jones, I guess, the next year.
I went in 2000, yep.
Okay. And there are people praying. And you're going to be the instrument of answering that prayer a decade later. Mm-hmm. We can't even conceive of that. That's incomprehensible. To the listener, are you getting this? God is orchestrating this. So that must have touched your hearts when you began to hear that.
It really touched our hearts.
And I say here, I'm using that term loosely, because they're communicating to you in sign language.
Right.
Right, and which Luke, I'm not sure if we've mentioned.
We haven't.
He has grown up with a deaf friend at home in New Hampshire, where he grew up, and then later at college had deaf roommates and went on to interpret in our home church.
So it's almost as though God has been preparing you for this your entire life.
He absolutely has.
What an amazing God we serve.
I guess maybe we're blind to it. We just had our eyes focused on what we thought God wanted us to do. Not that we ever said no, because we knew that that was a talent he had. We were open to it, but maybe we weren't open enough. But God had a big plan to lead us there. And not just to lead us there, but it has impacted our lives, and it's impacted many people's lives as we've been able to share what God has done through it, and we've been able to give the gospel.
To what degree did you fall in love with the people? How did that happen?
To this degree, I've had, as Jessica mentioned, I grew up with a deaf friend, very, very close. And then my friends from college, we're all very, very close. But Jessica didn't know sign language.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we would get together with me and my friends, I'm talking back here in the United States, she could never communicate with them, and she always kind of felt as an outsider.
Right.
And so as we prepared to go to Bolivia, we did say, well, we told churches, I do sign language, and you never know, God might do something with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Jessica had never felt anything towards the deaf, not out of a spite or anything like that. But when we were there and they shared with us that they had been praying for 10 years,
Jessica... Can you remember when you heard that? I mean, can you... I mean, I just can't conceive of... There you are, you're laid up.
I don't have a remembrance of the exact moment, more just that time frame
mm-hmm.
of them conveying that message to us and just being impressed that here's an unreached people group too, even though they're in the middle of a city, because truly deaf are neglected. And in that particular city, there, as far as I know, other than this lady, there had not been anybody there to reach out to them and give them the gospel, except for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
And I knew that it really was God moving when Jessica and I are talking with each other later, and Jessica said, Luke, I am completely open to a ministry to the deaf if God's leading us that way. And that's the first time she had ever said anything like that. And we began praying over it and seeking God's will. God, is this really what you have? I mean, we see this great need here.
Mm-hmm.
We still have a heart for Uyuni, but is this where you would have us to go? And it was not long, and God confirmed that in our hearts. And we committed to move to Sucre. And two and a half months later, we moved over, we picked up life where we were, and moved 8 hours to the city of Sucre, and began, from that moment, working with the deaf.
Now, this is a location that you would have never went, other than just travel. Is it the big city? Is that how you get in and out of it, or...?
It's a city kind of central in Bolivia, and it's actually not really on the way to anything. You know, most people go to the other bigger cities, except unless you're on one side of the city and you're passing through to get to the salt desert. But a lot of tourists go to this city, and other than the people who live there, it's not really a city that anybody goes to.
So this is not a coincidence.
This is absolutely not a coincidence.
No, ordained by God.
Outside of this exceptionally tragic, traumatic breakdown, survival, you would not have went to that city.
We would have not have went
probably
to that city.
If your vehicle had not broken down, if you hadn't stopped and just kept going, you'd
think we'd be living in Uyuni.
Right.
In an entirely different ministry.
All right, Luke, what I find so amazing about this is the linkage of our missions conference theme, which came out of Acts chapter 10. And let's just be real brief. The uniqueness of Acts chapter 10 is that God goes out of his way to link Peter up with Cornelius.
Right.
You know, 30 miles apart, both of them having visions. You're seeing an angel. You're having a vision. You go down there, get Peter, get him up there. You need to hear this message. And it just becomes this amazing example from a biblical text of how God orchestrates the salvation of Cornelius.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're so guilty, Jessica, of thinking, well, that was cool and God did that 2,000 years ago. But, I mean, this is now and it's the 21st century and I have an iPhone and Google. And, I mean, God's not that involved anymore. I mean, I understand back then. But what we have here in your situation is an Acts chapter 10 event in the year 2009.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a 30-mile trek from Joppa to Caesarea. You had to hike 20-plus miles to link up with a vehicle that would provide your survival, get you to a town where there is no good medical treatment. You said that the first doctor you saw provided virtually nothing, and you have to get that you have to get well. You can get infections at this point. We've had church members that have gotten infections in their foot and actually had to be amputated here.
Yeah. Wow!
In America,
and our feet were definitely infected because they were very swollen at this point, and we could barely walk.
Right, and so this is absolutely critical that you go. And who's going to provide medical care for you? And there's no Blue Cross and Blue Shield and all this thing that we just take for granted. And God says, go here to this house, and this lady will minister to you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A woman you've never met before.
Right.
Never met, and she was incredibly gracious.
You have no idea who she was up to this point. Mm-hmm. And she becomes this instrument of God's grace to you guys.
Absolutely.
For how many weeks were you laid up?
Just a hair under 3 weeks.
Right. Unbelievable. And God does all that. So tell us, Luke, what's your website so that we can go on here and we can see pictures and we can learn more about it?
The website is www.4,
okay,
the Gospel's Sake. And there are two S's there together, gospelssake.com.
For the Gospel's Sake.
No apostrophe.
Oh, no apostrophe, of course. I'm just trying to be grammatically
com.
So it's 4thegospelssake.com. And this is where we can get contact information.
This is where you can get contact.
Email you.
Right.
Tell you that we've been encouraged by this podcast. If we want to support your ministry, if we have deaf people that we want to bring to your attention so that you begin praying for them, if we want to get behind what you're doing. You've still got 4 more months that you're in the States, is that right?
That's correct. Or
more? How much more time?
Into September.
All right, so this is the month of March. So September is the 9th month. This is the 3rd month, so 6 more months. So do you have any Sundays open, or are you available to go preach and share your ministry?
We do have some Sundays still open.
Yes. It would probably be best to call and check the calendar.
Okay.
But we would love to visit more churches and share our burden and even share the story.
Where are you working out of?
Wherever our van is parked at the moment.
Okay, so we don't even have a home.
We do not have a home.
Wow. Okay, and so you need churches to get behind you. How much money are we still trying to get back on the field, Luke?
Just about $1,500 more a month.
Okay, so you need some supporting churches.
We do.
Absolutely, and we want to help, and we want to encourage you. If you're a pastor, if you're a listener and your pastor needs to get behind this endeavor, if you want Luke to come and Jessica and share this story in person, and you guys have pictures that you can show, and is your video, tell us where your YouTube video is. How could we find that?
The YouTube video is under the About Us tab there on our website.
And the YouTube video, we're going to see pictures of this salt desert.
Correct.
and you.
We'll tell the story about getting stranded in the salt desert and God graciously rescuing us and introducing us to our current ministry. And then we'll give details about where we're working and what the people group are like and what our ministry is, all in that video.
All right. Well, we certainly do. Brian appreciates the fact that you sat down at the mic with us and that you shared your story. And we're going to do our very best to get this out to as many people as we can, and we pray that God will bless this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.